You're listening to LGRadio.online. Welcome to In the Benny Green Archives.
Well, this is my first affair. Please be kind, handle my heart with care. Please be kind, this is all so grand. My dreams are on parade. If you'll just understand, they'll never, never fade. So tell me your love's sincere. Please be kind, tell me I needn't fear. Please be kind, 'cause if you leave me, dear, I know my heart will lose its mind. If you love me, please be kind. This is my first affair, so please be kind, handle my heart with care. Oh, please be kind. Tell me your love's sincere. Yes, please be kind. Tell me I needn't fear. Please be kind, 'cause if you leave me, dear, I know my heart will lose its mind. If you love me, baby,
Sammy Carr once wrote a song for Fred Astaire, and the picture never got made, or at least not with Astaire in it. What the song badly needed for preservation was a classic performance. And when he told me this story, Sammy Carr really got very emotional indeed.
We were reading the script, and the script deals with this irresponsible character. And I said to Van Heusen, who's a couch composer, you know, he lies on the couch and looks at the ceiling, like a title, calling me irresponsible. And vividly, I remember him getting up, going to the piano, and very simply doing this. I said, we've got to sing this song for Astaire. He says, when do you want to do it? I said, we'll call him tomorrow. He says, well, make it in the afternoon. I said, what's the difference? He said, well, let's rehearse it. Well, I made it for 2:30. Van Heusen met me at 12. We played the song for 2 hours. I was going insane. Finally came the moment. I said, Mr. Astaire, I said, you know the scene where you have done one of your usual erratic things like buying a circus? I said, now you come home and your wife is sitting up in bed with her hair in curlers and her lips in a thin line, and she is staring at you. And you say, well, I'm sorry, darling. And seeing how your alibis are just falling on flat ears, finally you say, call me irresponsible, call me unreliable, throw an undependable too. Do my foolish alibis bore you? Well, I'm not too clever, I just adore you. And he said, stop. Van Heusen almost fell off the piano bench. And Astaire said, that's one of the best songs I've ever heard in my life. I said, that's one of the best half songs you ever heard in your life. And the better half is coming up. And I finished the song and he said, that is just marvelous. I was at the Sands Hotel when Sinatra stepped out opening night. He said, "Ladies and gentlemen, I recorded a song last night. I think it's one of the best songs I've ever recorded in my life. May I do it for you?" And he starts to sing "Call Me Irresponsible." Cold, first time. He didn't know the lyrics. And it was funny because he said things like, "Call me unpretentiable, tell me unsufficiable." He said words that didn't make any sense. But the song hushed that audience, and I was so exhilarated. It was a really, really memorable experience for me.
Call me irresponsible, call me unreliable, throw in undependable too. Do my foolish alibis bore you? Well, I'm not too clever, I just adore you. Call me unpredictable, tell me I'm impractical. Rainbows I'm inclined to pursue. Call me irresponsible. Yes, I'm unreliable, but it's undeniably true. I'm irresponsibly mad for you. Call me irresponsible. Yes, I'm unreliable, but it's undeniably true. I'm irresponsibly mad.
I know a lot of people who associate the sentiments of that song with Sinatra's private persona. To mark his 50th birthday, he sang one of the most moving ballads of his entire career. It sounds to me as though it was written to fit his facts. If it wasn't, I can only say it should have been. How many tens of thousands of middle-aged men, I wonder, followed its sentiments and sighed a little too deeply for comfort?
When I was 17, it was a very good year. It was a very good year for small town girls and soft summer nights. We'd hide from the light on the village green. When I was 17, when I was 21, it was a very good year. It was a very good year for city girls who lived up the stair with all that perfumed hair, and it came undone when I was 21. When I was 35, it was a very good year. It was a very good year for blue-blooded girls of independent means. We'd ride in limousines. Their chauffeurs would drive when I was 35. But now the days are short, I'm in the autumn of the year, and now I think of my life as vintage wine from fine older kegs. From the brim to the dregs, it poured sweet and clear. It was a very good year.
Irwin Drake's magnificent ballad about not being as young as he used to be. But as Sinatra, even Sinatra, began to age a little, he went on trying to stay young by finding material from younger writers. One of the bravest attempts, and I think one of the most imaginative, was an album which, by its very nature, was doomed not to be played on record programs nearly as often as it might. That is the danger attaching to albums whose tracks tell a developing story. The writer was a man called Bob Gaudio, who was introduced to Sinatra by Frankie Valli, and was asked by Sinatra if he couldn't cook up a little something for him to record. Well, that was the great misunderstanding. Sinatra meant a song. Gaudio thought he meant an album.
In my discussions with Frank, I assumed that we were talking about an album. But I assumed that, and he didn't assume that, you see. So here we are, we did all our demos, and we put the whole thing together, and we spent, I don't know, 4 or 5 months on it. And I sent it out, and I think it was Sarge Weiss, a lovely man who works with Sinatra's publishing, called me and said, Frank wants to do all of them, he just loves them. And I said, well, how dare he? What do you mean? Of course he wants to do all of them. We spent 6 months working on this project. You mean maybe he was only going to do one or two of them? You know, it was a funny reaction I had, and then I thought about it after I got off the phone and I started laughing at myself. I said, what the audacity.
The album was called Watertown, and because of its sequential structure, demanded a different approach by the listener, who had to sit down and take the whole thing as a single entity, rather than as a succession of songs.
We had it envisioned to be a one-man special, where there would be Sinatra doing this whole theme song of Watertown, and it could have been a Broadway show with sets and things revolving around just him. That's what we envisioned when we wrote it, and it unfortunately didn't turn out to go the whole way, but we felt real good about what we did with it.
You always looked a little out of place, all grown up with freckles on your face.
We'd spend each night with company, just you, the teddy bear, the dolls and me. What a funny girl you used to be. You always had a thousand things to do. Getting all involved in something new. Always some new recipe. The kitchen always looked like World War III. What a funny girl you used to be. It was so good with you around. You always found a smile where smiles could not be found. I never ever met a person more sincere. You'd always listen with an open ear. You'd fall for lines so easily, whatever they were selling, you'd buy three. What a funny girl you used to be. What a funny girl you used to be. What a funny girl you used to be.
Watertown was probably the most daring and courageous stroke that Sinatra pulled in the later years of his career. But his courting of the new generation of songwriters hit a rather more commercially successful streak with the Mutual Admiration Society involving Joe Raposo. Raposo drifted into the enviable position once or twice of accompanying Sinatra at parties, and from then on the association slowly grew. But the memorable song that came out of it wasn't really meant for Sinatra at all.
There was a television special project with Barbara Streisand, which had fallen through. It was to be called Barbara's Brooklyn. It was about Barbara's childhood in Brooklyn. And I was writing it with a man named Pete Hamill, who's quite a good American journalist. Pete is from Brooklyn. Barbara's from Brooklyn. I am not from Brooklyn, but we overlooked that. And Hamill and I went out one day and went to the spot where Ebbets Field, the home of the fabled Brooklyn Dodgers baseball team. This is a place called Ebbets Field. I mean, renowned in baseball lore and the hearts of all native-born Brooklynites. And it was a terrible day, and the rain was falling, and that whole nasty Watergate mess was bubbling up, and we did not realize that it was going to virtually engulf a presidency and threaten the Constitution, but we knew it was bad. And I wrote a song called There Used to Be a Ballpark Right Here, because where Ebbets Field was now a low-income housing project. And the poignancy of it, two signs I remember seeing. One, a brass plaque on the side of this building where children were running around, obviously poverty-stricken kids, that said, on this site, year to year, whatever it was, stood Ebbets Field, home of the Brooklyn Dodgers. And next to it was a sign scrawled on the building, stenciled on, no ball playing allowed. And that triggered something in me, and I wrote the song.
By accident, Raposo had touched a nerve in Sinatra, a nerve which went back to his own boyhood, when he had done what all the kids used to do, gone to see the great baseball teams. But between Sinatra's boyhood and his maturity, an amazing thing had happened. baseball had virtually moved out of New York and gone to live on the West Coast. Raposa's song was social history, and it was also part of Sinatra's personal history.
And there used to be a ballpark where the field was warm and green, and the people played their crazy game with a joy I'd never seen. And the air was such a wonder, from the hot dogs and the beer. Yes, there used to be a ballpark right here. And there used to be rock candy and a great big 4th of July, with the fireworks exploding all across the summer sky. And the people watched in wonder how they laugh and how they cheer. And there used to be a ballpark right here. Now the children try to find it, and they can't believe their eyes, 'cause the old team just isn't playing, and the new team hardly tries. And the sky has got so cloudy, when it used to be so clear. And the summer went so quickly this year. Yes, there used to be a ballpark right here.
What is interesting about that recording and the attitude it implies is that so many people like Sinatra, who were raised on the eastern seaboard but found their eventual fortune out in California, never quite lost the conviction that New York was what really mattered. You could become a Hollywood big shot, a Beverly Hills Lion, but if they didn't rate you on Broadway, where were you? Coincidence or not, that was the theme of one of Sinatra's last big world hits, a song written again for quite another context by the talented partnership of Fred Ebb and John Kander.
Start spreading the news, I'm leaving today. I want to be a part of it. New York, New York, these vagabond shoes are longing to stray right through the very heart of it. New York, New York. I want to wake up in a city that doesn't sleep, and find I'm king of the hill, top of the heap. These little town blues are melting away. I'll make a brand new start of it in old New York. If I can
in a city that never sleeps. And find I'm a number one, top of the list, king of the hill, a number one. These little town blues. It's up to you, New York, New York, New York.
That version of New York, New York has become the definitive one. Because when Sinatra sings a song he really likes, it stays sung. Will anybody ever again challenge his version of One for My Baby, or I've Got You Under My Skin, or will let each listener make up his own list? Sinatra, I think, represents an amazing stroke of good fortune for the popular song and for us. Just at the point where there was this vast repertoire of standard songs waiting to be done justice to, along comes the one singer of the century capable of doing justice to them all.
I believe in the word. The word first. That's why I think I've had almost a closer relationship with lyricists than I've had with composers, because I spend more time with lyricists. And I admire them because they do for me what my job needs. Not that the other guys don't do that. I need the music too. But I've always felt that the words, my story, has to be out front, whatever I'm saying to the audience. And the music is almost like a backdrop and like a curtain or something.
Sinatra once said that if it hadn't been for men like Gershwin and Porter, he would have been out somewhere selling ties. Not only Gershwin and Porter, but what about Chester and Lefty, to whom he refers so warmly in the track with which we end this tribute? Well, Babcock turns out to be the baptismal name of Jimmy Van Heusen, and Lefty is an affectionate synonym for Gordon Jenkins. As for Sinatra, you can take it the other way around and say that but for him, the great works of men like Gershwin and Porter and company might never have found the versions they deserved. As for the man himself, he doesn't give up. There may be all sorts of things still to come. He still has these restless dreams about doing a little more. Always a little more.
And when the music ends, I'd like it to end this way. I'll ask Chester to write me one more song. I'll get Lefty to make me one more chart. And I'll make one more record with the best musicians in the world.
And that's it. See you same time next week.
You've been listening to In the Benny Green Archives here on lgradio.online. Please do visit the website to find out when the next episode is on, along with all our other shows. This is lgradio.online. Thanks for listening.